Thank you for subscribing to InvestTalk. We'll begin in just a moment. KPP Financial Senior Vice President Justin Klein explains why a registered investment advisor firm wants to talk about real estate.
Your home is an important piece of your total financial picture. You need to make sure that when you do retire, you have a plan to maybe relocate, downsize if need be.
Contact Justin directly with a note on investtalk.com. Just select Contact Justin or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now, InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to January 5th, the January 5th edition of InvestTalk. It's Tuesday, 2016. It's a new year. Happy New Year, everybody. We're here to help you. We want to help the average investor become above average. That's our goal. With the market volatility whipping us around, you know, we got a lot of emotions going. I mean, think about what happened yesterday. Today was a little bit calmer with the market, you know, kind of on the upside. Nothing major, but a little bit of positive. It was a mixed market, but, you know, at least it didn't continue its downward fall from yesterday. But, you know, we need to refocus on the fundamentals of the companies that we're following, that we're buying, that we want to buy. The fundamentals will ultimately play out in the price of the stock. The ones that you own, if the fundamentals will drive it eventually. But of course, short term, anything could happen. Now, when you're researching a company, you must understand how that company makes money. What factors can affect the earnings of the company? Are they a global company? Are they a domestic company? Where do they get their money from? Where do they get their earnings? You know, you can very quickly find that out. That's not hard. And if they're a global company, you got to understand the revenue breakdown by each region, because it's important when you repatriate those profits from those foreign countries, what is the effect of the stronger dollar? You got to, on that region. There's different. You have to look at all the different things. Where do you think the dollar's going to go from here versus the regions that that company is making money around the world? Then, of course, you got to look at the industry and the company that the company operates. How's that industry? Is it? Who are the competitors? What strategy do they use to gain customers? You know, do they target the premium end of their niche or their market, like Apple does, or BMW, the premium side? Or are they a Walmart and Hyundai in their industry? And if you don't know that, then you're not doing your fundamental analysis properly. It doesn't matter which one you buy. That's not the issue. You can buy the high-end Apple BMW or the low-end Walmart Hyundai. You just have to understand how they make profits and the valuations based on how they make profits of that industry. And once you find out the strong, steady, repeatable business model companies that you want, that you're really going to buy, that's when you start looking at technical analysis, the charts. That helps you determine where you want to buy them. And that's all that does. And remember, the chart is not, chart reading is not a science. It's kind of an art. It just tends to be true. It's true more than it's not true. Finding support on a chart where the stock has come down and stopped going down. Those things are just tend to be true. You just got to do the work. It takes work. And it will eventually lead you to profits. It will. Doesn't do it every year. You're not going to make money constantly, month after month after month. That does not how the stock market works. So, do you have questions about fundamentals? Maybe technicals? Let's get to the conversation. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. And I hope you will become part of the conversation, because it's something that I really enjoy. So give me a call now.
Yes, my name is Art. I am from Pasadena. My question is about ETF. We know that all ETFs is not managed fund. But my question is about the ETF that, let's say, top holding on the ETF, one of the stock every day going down, down, down. Do they make any changes on the holding, or just leave it as is, till that stock, let's say, it's going to disappear? And my second question is, maybe this is a stupid question, but I don't know the answer. There is some ETFs that I never heard the name. I mean, is it possible that those ETFs, I mean, the owner or the managed fund can cash it all the money and they disappear. It can be like that. Is there any regulation about that? Thank you. Bye.
Well, I'll answer the second question. Yeah, there's lots of regulations about ETF, exchange-traded funds. And, it would be pretty difficult, next to impossible, for the manager to try to steal the money. It's not going to – I don't want to say it never could happen, but the odds are extremely small because they hold positions in the ETF. And, you own your part of those positions. So – anyways, the first part of your question, most ETFs, as you say, are not managed. They follow an index. If they follow an index, if the ETF is following an index, then whatever happens to individual stocks in the index is what happens. If some go out of business, no, they don't sell them. They own the index. They own all of them. They own the whole index. If they follow a sector, okay, and so it's in a sector ETF, they will follow the entire sector. So no matter what happens, they won't. If they started picking and choosing what they wanted in their ETF, then you're talking about a managed ETF. And most 99/9 are not managed. There are going to be some managed ETFs coming up, and if there's one or two out there, that's possible. But that's about all there is. So most ETFs are non-managed, following index or sectors or a particular strategy, and they're not generally managed. They don't pick and choose what they want to buy and sell inside that index or strategy or sector. Okay, good question though. Appreciate the close question. We're going to talk about closed-end funds, which are kind of related to ETFs. Is there an opportunity in closed-end funds? What are the benefits? What are the drawbacks? That's going to be one of our main talking points today. Pershing Square, do you know who Pershing Square is? It's one of the largest and most successful hedge funds. I want to talk about how they did in 2015. And this is William Ackman's fund. He's the guy that's always, he's very involved in his holdings. He's an activist investor. So we're going to talk about him. And what I want to talk about, analysts and strategists. The analysts are guys who look at individual stocks and how bullish or bearish they are for 2016. And then look at the S&P strategists that look at the overall market. They don't look at individual stocks. They look at the overall market and what their prospects are for 2016. I think you'll find this very interesting because they're not the same. Very different. Also, one other thing, take a look back at 2015. What did the mutual, this is a piece out of the Mutual Fund Observer. It sums up 2015 for the mutual fund managers. And it breaks down the various types of funds and which funds, what group of funds worked, which didn't. I think you'll find this very interesting too. At least I did. So that's what we're going to discuss this hour. Of course, we will discuss what's on your mind anytime you want to call and bring up a topic. The market itself today, after being down pretty heavy yesterday, it did come back toward the end of the day. I think you probably noticed that. I mean, it was down 400 plus points, the Dow did, was. But by the end of the day, it was 200 and something points down. But today, the Dow was up 10, just 10. The S&P was up 4. But the Nasdaq was down 12. So it was a mixed market. But the good part of that is you didn't have a panic follow-through of sales from yesterday. The bad part of that is you didn't get a bounce much either. So what is it? What's happening? Are we in for a more of down volatility? Now, it's kind of interesting because the market fell right down to support, short-term support yesterday and bounced off of that. And then it's holding it today. And the more significant support is down where it fell back in August. Remember that? Remember 4 or 5 days the market just took a dive? And that's where more significant support is. It's not down there, but it is down where it was back in December. The low part of December before it rallied a little bit. So, we didn't get our Christmas rally. Are we going to get our January effect? Historically, January effect is a positive thing for the market. But there's also kind of interesting, there's a old saying, and old sayings have their roots in a grain of truth. There's old saying says that as the first day of January goes, so goes the, and so goes the first week, and so goes the month, so goes the year. In other words, if the market's down the first day, if it's down the first week, and if it's down for the whole month of January, the whole year will be down. That's what that that's what that saying means. So we had a first down day, yeah, pretty big down day of the first day of the week, of first trading day of the first day trading day of the new year, and now we are into the Tuesday, so we'll see how the rest of the week goes. And then if the day and the week are down, then we see how the month goes. And then the saying says, well, that's how the whole year is going to go. So, but yeah, that's an old saying. Doesn't have to be true. This is the first fresh start time of the year, everybody. Why not give your retirement plan a fresh look at it, a fresh start? That's that. This market is not the same market it was going to be in 2015. It doesn't repeat itself like that. It could be worse or it could be better. Don't think it's going to be the same, but you need to take a look at your holdings. So say the date, January 13th, that's when I'll be in the Bay Area. If you want to meet with me, go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Frank in Redwood City. How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good.
Thank you.
Got a couple questions for you regarding the outlook for this year regarding LCI Lynette with the purchase that took place last year. What your views are, the outlook for this year, and then with all the turmoil that's been happening, this, you know, China stuff or whatever, and the Fed raising rates, basically telling us we got a strong economy or whatever. What's your outlook?
Okay, let's talk about Lynette Corp Company, Inc. LCI is the symbol. It's a $1.4 billion company. Develops generic versions of drugs that treat thyroid deficiencies, migraines, epilepsy, glaucoma, and other conditions. It acquired a few months ago, acquired a unit of UCB, a generic pharmaceutical company focused on generic products. They're going to make $4.03 this year, which is about the same amount they made last year. And next year, it's going to be $4.60. They are pretty cheap based on those earnings, Frank. The price is pretty cheap as a, you know, $39.58 stock. It fell sharply most of the year last year and bottomed right around $33, $34. And now it's at $39. I think this is a pretty good place to buy it. Sales are strong. They're still growing, you know, and they're not growing as fast as they were, about 14 to 20% per quarter. They don't have any debt. Management owns 7% of the company. Mutual funds are buyers of the company. I mean, there's a lot of good things, and I think this is a good price to buy it. I like Lynette. Okay, Frank?
With the outlook, This shakiness of the China stuff, does that, should I get shaked out because of this at all?
I don't think it, you know, there always are problems with every company. You know, there's always some issues. But I think that they look pretty good on their forecasts, their drugs that they have. And I even Obamacare is not going to hurt them that much. I think they'll be fine. I really do. I like it. Thanks, Frank. I appreciate the call. The first thing that everyone should know about money management is the difference between investing and saving. The difference between investing and saving. So let's talk about that. Maybe you have questions about reverse mortgages or college savings or real estate. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk about closed-end funds. Think of closed-end funds as, they've been around a lot longer than ETFs, but they are similar to ETFs in that They could track an index or a sector or a grouping of stocks. And that's what they usually do. They've been around a lot longer, and they kind of get the short end of the stick, I think. There's advantages and disadvantages for closed-end funds. And at the present time, there are a number of compelling closed-end funds trading at deep discounts. Let me explain that. Mutual funds, ETFs, when they get popular, people want to buy them. They issue more shares, so that meaning the mutual funds and ETFs, trade at the net asset value of the holdings they have inside them. The actual value of what they hold is what the price is, the average number of stocks, the formula that comes and tells you, okay, this is how much it's worth. If you sold that, that's how much worth the holdings are right now at this net asset value of this ETF and mutual fund. Closed-end funds don't do that. They could have the exact same track index. They could have the S&P 500 in a closed-end fund and an S&P 500 in an open-end fund, and the closed-end fund could sell at a discount or a premium to the actual holdings. Why? Because they have a finite number of shares. They don't increase the shares to keep it at the net asset value. They have just a certain number of shares at issue, and now it becomes, well, if the holdings inside that, are they popular? Is there a lot of demand for them? Or are they unpopular? Everybody hates that index or that sector. So that what happens is buyers and sellers drive the net asset value of a closed-end fund. So it can sell at a deep discount, at no discount at all, or premium to the holdings, be worth more than what the holdings inside. And right now, there's a lot of discounts in closed-end funds, meaning that the holdings inside them are worth maybe $10 a share, but the closed-end fund is selling for $9 a share, even though the holdings are worth more. And therein lies one of the principal advantages of a closed-end fund. You can buy them at certain times at pretty steep discounts. And maybe that's something that's attractive. For instance, John Hancock Premium Dividend Fund, PDT. John Hancock, that fund has mostly utilities. And as of a month or so ago, they had a yield of about 8%. And they were selling at an 11% discount to the holdings inside them. Or, if you don't like that one, that's PDT. How about a high BlackRock corporate high yield fund? Remember how everybody hates high yield bond funds and bonds right now? Well, if you're brave, you can buy these things. This particular one's at 13.7% discount, paying 8.2% dividend. So it's cheaper than the actual holdings. Now, why is it cheaper? Because everybody doesn't like them. They don't like those high-yield bonds. They're worried about defaults. But it's a fund that has a lot of different bonds in it. So it's spread out. You got protection. You got a pretty good dividend rate. And you're buying it at cheaper than market. See, there's certain times, certain funds that may make it attractive. Now, so some of the things that are not attractive about them, they generally have higher fees. Higher fees. That's one of the things that's not attractive. There's certain issues that make them less attractive. And you need to read this article on our website. Go to our website, investtalk.com. Take a look at this article, and it'll give you a good handle on one of the benefits and discounts of a closed-end fund. But I told you the major difference. The major difference between a closed-end fund and ETS, which could be doing the exact same thing, is that it's closed-in. That means it's a finite number of shares. It can sell at a premium or a discount to the value of the holdings. That's the major difference. And believe they've been around a lot longer than ETS. But no one really pays much attention to them. They're not nearly as popular. but maybe they should be. Take a look at them. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. Coming up on the next half hour, companies you can't live without. Companies you can't live without. We're going to talk about that. 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime number. You can call us right now. 888-992-4278.
Part of the InvestTalk experience is visiting our website, investtalk.com. And one of the reasons for a visit is Steve's market commentary. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to his market commentary. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, it's not inconceivable to think that the U.S. goes through a Japan-like boom and bust cycle, ultimately not going anywhere for decades to come. What if deflation is our fate? That's one of our talking points on the next Invest Talk. And bring your question to the table, too. 888-99-CHART is our 24-hour line. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Listening to Invest Talk, answers to important questions. What's your money topic today?
Canadian Investment Trust.
Time Managed Fund.
I want to know, when do you know when to sell your mutual fund?
Get your question to us now. We're ready. 888-99-CHART. That's how to reach Invest Talk anytime.
Appreciate the show. Very educational.
Hello, this is Edwin from San Ramon. I would like to know about your take on CVX Chevron. Thank you.
One of the largest oil companies in the world, you know, ExxonMobil being the largest, if you don't count some of the sovereign oil companies like Saudi Arabia. But, you know, of course, it's all going to be about oil. Everybody knows that. If the oil prices go down, these companies will suffer. Now, so the question you have to ask yourself, since oil is like 70% off of the price of 2014, you know, down 70%, is it going to go down more? The only way it's going to go down more, well, there's more than one way, but is if the demand is not there. If the demand keeps shrinking, demand is not shrinking, it's shrinking in the U.S., but worldwide demand is still growing, just very slowly, and supply has outstripped demand. So supply will shrink and it will start to shrink a bit more when prices go down. How far will they go down? Is it down far enough? Because it's in the, you know, what, the high 30s right now? $30, $37 a barrel. So Chevron is a very well-run company. They're integrated, meaning they look for oil, they pump it out of the ground, they refine it, and they sell it. So along the chain, they're going to make money. I cannot imagine Shell Oil, ExxonMobil not making money. They'll make money. Sales will go down, but they'll still make a profit. Profits will fall, and they already have fallen. I mean, they're falling from 2014, $10 a share, to $3.31 this year. Let me take that back. 2015, $3.31. And then next year, $3.42. They're still making money. They have a nice dividend, 4.8. So it's really a question, do you think oil prices have fallen far enough? That is the issue. It's a $90 stock going to make $3.32. That's not cheap. Now, if oil prices go up, it'll start looking cheap. So that's where you got to ask yourself. If you feel oil prices have stopped falling or near where it's going to stop falling, then you start picking up these companies. And by the way, in our managed account, we own Chevron, CVX. We own the company. We bought that not too long ago. So I think oil prices are getting close to where they're going to stop going down. Meanwhile, it pays a 4.8% dividend. It's a $19.17 cash flow per share. Huge cash flow. So I kind of like that. And, you know, it's really a question you got to decide. Do you think the oil prices have stopped going down, or are they heading down for another downstroke? Which is very possible, by the way. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball. But I just know that, hey, 70% off the high for oil, barrel oil, and, you know, I know that rig counts are way down, so they're not going to be looking for much. And supply is starting to show a little bit of shrinkage, even though there'll be some supply coming on in Iran. Yeah, we'll see that. But it's really you know, up to you. What do you think oil prices are going to do? Is it cheap enough? If you feel they're about as low as it's going to be, then you start looking around at oil companies. If you think it's still going to continue to fall, then you don't. Time for InvestTalk 101. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see Mark. I'm sorry. I didn't see you there, Mark. Mark in Mountain View. How you doing, Mark?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you. Good afternoon. Yeah, I have a question about sediment dates. If I'm not mistaken, I thought it was the sediment dates are usually 3 business days for both buy and sell. But yesterday I was talking to a broker, my brokerage, and they said when you buy, it's automatically deducted from your account, whereas if you sell, it's 3 business days. Is that correct? Is that something that's new, that's changed?
No, it's always settlement date is at that's your brokerage firm. Settlement date is always no longer than 3 days. They can do it faster, both buy and sell. Okay? And it's to their advantage to take the money out immediately, right? And to their advantage to not give it to you for 3 days when you sell. So when you buy something, your brokerage takes it out immediately. When you sell something, they're going to give it back to you after 3 days.
Does this differ from broker to broker? Is
yes.
The NASDAQ thing?
Or? Yes. Yes.
Oh, I see.
See, the absolute maximum is 3 days. See, they got to do it within 3 days. They can do both sides, which really irritates me, just so you know, Mark. They can do this instantly. It's all electronic. Why can't they both buy and sell instantly and settle instantly? Why did it take 3 days? I can't see any reason for that to happen this day and age. The only reason it did happen in the past is because, you know, things are slower. Now they can be everything electronic. They can do it instantly, but they don't. And, of course, they're going to use their advantage. They'd rather take that 3 days and try to make a little money on your money. That's what they try to do.
Oh, I see. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, Mark. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Tim in San Jose. How you doing, Tim?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to ask you about FTX. Do you think they will survive if the oil keeps going down?
Yes. FCX is Freeport-McMoRan, right? FCX? Okay, well, that's not related to oil. This is the exploration, engaged in exploration and development of copper, gold, silver mines. Okay, so it's a precious metal company, mining company. And so it's not really related to gold, but it is in the commodity sectors. And, of course, the commodity sector, all the commodities got crunched the last couple of years. And, of course, Freeport-McMoRan is no different. Now the question, just like gold, it was like oil, what we're talking about. Do you think gold and silver has stopped coming down? If it is, this is the kind of stock you want to pick up. They're going to lose 8 cents a share this year, but next year they're going to make 60 cents a share. And it's a $6.71 stock. So that's a 10 PE about, based on next year's earnings. If gold and silver start to move up, this stock will look really, really cheap. Of course, it has fallen all year long last year and, you know, most of the year before. So you have to ask yourself, at $6.71 and a $5.75 per share cash flow and going to make money next year, is it worth it? Is it time to pick this up or not? And I can tell you that the two recent insider action have been buyers of this stock. And buyers actually at a higher price, by the way. At about, you know, $8.50. They were buyers. Insiders were buying this company. So now at $6.71, it's even cheaper. I wouldn't be surprised more buyers, more insiders start to buy. So
Paul Icahn, he bought at 16 something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So he thought it was cheap then. He got a little early. So Tim, I kind of like it because I do think it's probably near the cheapest it's going to be. I mean, as far as gold. Gold, I think, is not going to go down much further. I think it's trying to find support right where it is, you know, gold price. Therefore, these mining companies and precious metals should start to look better. Should. Okay? Thanks, Tim. Appreciate the call. Yeah, I think 2016 might be the year that you'll see precious metals maybe not go up a lot, but at least not go down anymore. That's what I think. But I could be wrong. I don't have a crystal ball. I'm just basing this on supply and demand. It looks like, you know, it's this supply and demand is finally, you know, they're starting to have equilibrium here. So I kind of like that. And, of course, you know, you can't forget what the dollar's doing and what, you know, currencies around the world and economies are doing and what, because gold goes up on inflation. It goes up on how strong the dollar is or up and down. And it goes up and down based on world tension, wars. So there's all those things that tend to drive gold you got to think about. Now it's time for InvestTalk 101, cyclical versus non-cyclical companies. Now, investors can't control those economic cycles. And that's what we're talking about, cyclical and non-cyclical companies. But cyclical and non-cyclical, we're talking about the economic cycle that these companies operate within. So even though you can't control the economic cycle, you can adjust your investing practices with the ebbs and flows of the economic cycle. So adjusting to economic transitions requires understanding of how industries are, or characterizations by different relationships to the economy. How did this happen? What does cyclical and non-cyclical mean? Cyclical and non-cyclical. It refers to how highly correlated a company's share price is to the economic fluctuations. Non-cyclical stocks repeatedly and always outperform the market when the economic system you're in, the economy, slows. While cyclical companies, they are highly correlated to a growing company. They will go up in value when the economy is growing. So it's different. Think of it this way. Necessity versus luxury. A non-cyclical company is a company that sells or provides a necessity. A cyclical company, provides products or services that are luxury. I'll give you an example. Automobiles. Do you have to buy a new car? No. You don't have to buy a new car. Deodorant. Dishwashing soap. Do you have to buy that? Do you have to buy that no matter what the economy is doing? Food. Do you have to buy that? See, so those are non-cyclical. Things you have to have. It doesn't. So that's what. Now, if you can understand how the economic cycle works, are we moving toward a expanding economy? Are we moving toward a shrinking economy? And then you can make adjustments to your holdings to reflect what the economy is going to do. This is not an easy thing. I'm not trying to suggest it's easy. But it is something that, you know, people very rarely think about. Think about drugs. Are they cyclical or non-cyclical? Drugs are non-cyclical. Everybody needs their drugs no matter what the economy is doing. So drug companies will sell their drugs. So if you feel like we're going into an economic recession or slowing down in our economy, drug companies look pretty decent because they won't go down. Now, 2008, didn't matter if you had cyclical or non-cyclical companies. They all went down. However, non-cyclical went down less. Okay, so they'll go down in a recession, but they'll go down less. Just like a high dividend paying stock will go down less in a recession if the earnings of that company and the dividend that they pay is in a non-cyclical company. See, it's a matter of where you think the economy is going to go and whether or not you want to make adjustments based on your holdings. How many non-cyclical companies do you have versus cyclical companies? Everybody needs gasoline, right? You need gasoline. But the demand for gasoline will go down in a recession. Still need it. So is that a non-cyclical or a cyclical? See, so it, you can see how difficult it is because it's shades of gray here too. It's not black and white, but there's all those shades of gray in between. So that's InvestTalk 101. I know it's a little, maybe, you know, you should ask yourself of your holdings, whether you got cyclical or non-cyclical stocks that identify which ones you have. So you know what you're doing. Okay, if you want to know more about this, there's an article on Investopedia article on our website. Just go to investtalk.com and go down to the Talking Point link. So I'm here for you, ready to answer any money questions you might have or any questions, as long as it's all financial related, real estate, you name it. Social Security, we'll talk about that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
In a world that becomes more complex every day, KPP Financial's programs are designed to simplify the individual investment process. Diversified portfolios transition as the global market environment dictates, recognizing that each individual has their own investment goals and risk tolerance. So no matter where your priorities lie, KPP has a strategy that fits your needs. To find out more, click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com.
My name is Joe. I listen to the program on the computer. I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida. My question is your opinion on SFL, its dividend, and if I was to write cover calls, and that would give me a nice percentage of about maybe 15 to 20%, maybe even better. What's your opinion on doing that? Thank you.
Well, when everything sounds too good, it means it is too good. You won't probably be able to achieve that. So just know that, okay? Because if you could do that, and you think you can do that, and you could do that, you don't think everybody else in the world would see that and do it, then it won't work. But Ship Financing International, it provides tanker transportation services for crude oil, refined oil products. It's a very inexpensive company. Of course, it's because it's in the commodity sector, right? But the it's going to make good money, $2.25 next year, $2.32 this year. And it's a $16 stock, so it's fairly inexpensive, and it has a pretty nice dividend that looks like it might be able to maintain. So, I think it's, if you feel that the commodity cycle is near its bottom, then this might be a good opportunity to pick this up. When does investment risk become dangerous? When you don't know how much you're taking. Why not take your risk analysis test? It's free. It takes about 3 minutes. It's the beginning of a learning experience. Go to our website, investtalk.com. Take the free Init risk analysis test. 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Ruby in Santa Clara. How you doing, Ruby?
Hi, Steve. Happy New Year to you.
You too.
Yeah, thank you. So, I would like to make some investments in the Apple stock. I'm wondering, a lot of rumors are happening these days. So, I would like to know the support levels. Which support level can I put some money into this for 3 to 4 years horizon?
Okay, I've had a lot of calls recently on Apple. We own Apple in our managed account, have for a number of years now. I think when it gets to about $100 a share, if it gets there, which is $102 right now or so, and it was down a couple bucks today, I think that's an ideal place to buy some of this stock. I mean, the PE right now is 11. The earnings are going to be $9.74 this year, going to be $10.69 a share next year. So it's going to be 10 or 9 PE, and that doesn't even count all the cash they have. So I still like it. I realize that a lot of people are not as favorable on it, but from even if it's a big blue chip company, it's growing very fast. The dividend, they have lots of money to increase their dividends and pay dividends if they want. And their product cycle is still pretty strong. I think about $100 is where you want to buy it, Ruby. Okay? Thanks for the call. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Analysts are more bullish in 2016 than S&P strategists. Okay? Analysts versus strategists. And what's an analyst? An analyst is a guy who looks at each individual stock and he puts a value based on what that stock is going to be worth next year. Okay, that's what an analyst does. Whereas an S&P strategist, he looks at the overall market and says, this is how much the market's going to go for a year. Both those people are not agreeing, those group of people. The analysts think the market, that look at individual stocks, remember, they look almost, 11,000 stocks, and they figure out what the average price point that they think it's going to be. You add those up, and what is going to be their target price increase? 13.8% this year. That's what they think the market's going to go up. 13.8% based on their individual price targets of all the stocks. The strategists think it's only going to go up 7.3% this year. Okay, now let me talk about experts. You heard me talk about, I even gave you stats about these same analysts and how off they were for 2015. Remember I said that if you took all the top 10 stocks and by analysts for the year and look at the bottom 10 stocks, the analysts for the year, the bottom 10 far outperformed their top 10 pick. So their analysts are always wrong. So it's a question of degree. How bad are they wrong? And they were really, really wrong in 2015. They thought the market was going to be up about 7, 8% last year. And now they're thinking the market's going to be up 13.8% this year. Whereas the strategists for the S&P think it's going to be up about 7.3% this year. You know, they never say, well, the market's going to be down 15% this year. I've never seen them come up with that kind of call. So don't take this with a grain of salt. Take all this with a grain of salt. Okay? And finally, before we give up the day, you know, I'm going to talk about the different mutual fund sectors and strategies and how did they turn out for the year of 2015? 8 out of 9 domestic equity categories, including large growth, 8 out of 9 were down. 17 of 17 asset allocation categories were down. 8 out of 15 international stock categories were down. That was the best of the group. 14 out of 15 taxable bond categories were down for the year. 6 out of 6 alternative or hedge fund categories were down for the year. That's how bad the market was in 2015. Just pointing it out. Our hour's up. If you have a question or comment that you want to share directly, you can get a note to me directly if you want at investtalk.com. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial. We thank you for listening, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.